Welcome to Krakoa. This is Almas.
This is Fox.
This is Rodders. And this is Juan.
Today we're going to be talking about last week's comics, and we're going to be starting with Marauders. Now, before we actually get into conversations, I need to defend Christian Frost. His name has been slandered on my timeline for killing Kate Pryde. And I just want to say, as much as I don't agree with Duggan's characterization of Christian Frost, Christian is in the right for killing Kitty. He's been traumatized to hell and back, so I'm pretty sure him killing Kitty, he has a good reason for it. We just don't know what it is. It's more than him just, like, wanting to get with Bobby. We just don't know what it is. That's the main thing I wanted to clear up.
Well, I think he could just be like his sister in the beginning.
Well, because the thing is, it's like he agreed to let Sebastian Shaw do whatever he wants so that he could get Bobby on his ship. But it's like, it doesn't make sense for him to be that cool with killing Kitty. I really don't know why everyone's saying Christian specifically killed Kitty. But, like, it was Shaw. But everyone has been like, Christian killed Kitty on my timeline. And I'm tired of that. That's all I have to say. That's my grievance with this issue.
Well, I don't think he specifically killed Kitty, but he had a little part in it. And I don't think it's so...
I think he's double agent.
Yeah, I think he's double agent, but I don't think it's so off-brand for him. Because if it's like brother, like sister, if you think of Emma, when she first started, she was double-crossing everybody all the time just to get what she wanted. So I think it's kind of maybe they're starting his path just like how she started her path.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Okay.
I'm guessing this is the first time Christian really has worked as a team, as a part of an organization, and I really think him and Emma are working on something here together. This is part of Christian's plan. Because I really just think it doesn't like him. I don't think he would do something to double cross his sister. I really don't. It just doesn't seem right to me. I don't think it would happen personally.
Yeah. I think the breakout star for this issue was definitely Callisto.
Yes.
I mean, especially when she first appeared and she's like Emma Frost is welcoming her and she's like, I needed you here. I mean, you're the perfect for the job. And she's like, I'm 2 hours late. And she's like, yep, that's why. That attention to detail, knowing that's why you're perfect. Like, it's so great. It's like a whole setup for like a comedy movie. I love that line.
I really like that they're who's in the health operation. Like we already have the Queen, the Red Bishop, the White Bishop, the Black King, Black Bishop, and now we have the White Knight. We're just gonna need to find Red Knight and who's Black. I think I don't know who Kitty would pick for her Red Knight. It would be interesting to find out, but whoever Sebastian picks for his Black Knight is probably going to be no good, not a good person. But I like that. I like hierarchical organizations where everybody has their type and it's like secret and everything. I kind of dig that. So that's just, I enjoy that. I Marauders is still one of my top three series.
I think there's like, I don't know, there's too much going on that book. I keep forgetting Cade is the main villain. Like every time I read the book and I see Cade, I'm pleasantly like surprised. And I know this issue was more of like a filler issue to space out the story arcs. But it really did feel like there was too much going on, but not enough being said. That's my review of this issue.
Another positive issue, Jumbo Carnation is back.
Oh, yeah, that was... I'm not really familiar with that character, but the interactions we had with that character was really just fabulous. I loved it.
I can't remember. I think it was Morrison's New X-Men. It was... Jumbo Carnation was a famous mutant designer, and it was... He was murdered in... He was murdered in New X-Men.
Well, because here's the thing. What happened was that he actually overdosed, but, like, it was framed as a murder. He was the reason Quentin started the riots.
Right. He overdosed on mutant drug. Forgot what it was called. Kicks. Right. Thank you.
So, yeah, but... I'm glad he's back, and I'm glad he's a fashion designer, because that's always fun to have, like, mutants who aren't superheroes. You know, because, like, it really does feel sometimes like mutants are superheroes, so it's nice to see him back and just doing what he loves, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That was a really nice addition to this whole Krakoa story. And I like how Callisto didn't, like, with her being reborn and brought to Krakoa, I like that she hasn't, like, lost her touch. They haven't really changed her character that much, because right from the beginning, she's already a badass. She's already like, well, if you're going to give me this suit, I'm going to make my own. I'm going to cut it. And, you know, I don't know if I'm going to take this gig or not. But we'll see, because you need me more than I need you. Or at least that's what she's giving off. So I love that, this, like, attention to detail of her character. They didn't change it that much. She's still a badass, even if she's going to come help the X-Men now.
Yeah, I don't think they're...
Marauders was...
Much more to discuss about Marauders.
Yeah. It wasn't really, like, an incredibly plot-heavy, that really sad point at the end, which I'm still not over, which I'm hoping is a misdirect, because I don't want the sweet baby boy Lockheed to be dead, because he's adorable,
Before we move on, did you read that in one of the pages Christian Frost's lingerie?
Yes, I think that was...
The desk page?
Yeah, no, I think that was from the previous issue that was from the previous issue where Yellow Jacket's monitoring everything that Pyro sees, and that was from the previous issue.
Oh,
it's fine.
But
the issues blurred together. I get that.
Yeah, I want to bring up another point that the little Hellfire Club. I mean, I know this Marauder seems like a little filler, but it is really building up to something, because the little Hellfire Club is getting with other people, and I mean they're designing more and more things to mess with mutants. Like that one lady, I forget what she was a part of. But her organization made the suits, and she said the first generation is with suits, but the next generation, it could be with sidearms. So they're trying to become even more clever and dangerous in ways to stop the mutants. Like, can you imagine, like, a sidearm of, like, a power dampener that maybe can kill you right off the bat? Like, that's bad news for the mutants that's coming back. And the new Hellfire Club is funding them.
Speaking of that blonde lady, why she's important, I don't know if you guys remember or not. She was in Hoxpox. She was one of, in the first issue, she was one of the dignitaries that was meeting with Magneto and everything.
I didn't remember that, but I'm glad you caught that.
Yeah,
I did not remember that.
Yeah, the blonde lady with glasses, she was there with Magneto in the beginning, and I think she was also one of the dignitaries that was there during the meeting, during the whole vote of having independence. Yeah, she was there, and I was like, I'm surprised more people didn't talk about it, because it was hold on, let me just look to make sure, because I'm almost that was her. And she has a very distinct...
It is her.
I'm just trying to make sure I'm not insane.
No, I noticed that too. I was like, oh, so they did a callback to the first issue.
Well, it's interesting because it seems like the Baby Hellfire Club is also leaking into other books. It's leaking into Black Cat.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, which we will talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
First off, we're going to talk about, though, we're going to move on to the big book of the week.
Fantastic Four
and X-Men. X-Men.
So, that book was a lot. There was a lot to take in. Yep. There were many opinions on it. I kind of don't have like a set opinion on it yet. I have to wait and see how it plays out, because the first issue was very reactionary.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely made the whole fandom kind of blow up in positive and negative ways. It made me blow up in a positive way. Like after I finished the issue before I read the director's cut, because we got the director's cut with it, and I was just so blown back by it. I mean, I love Chip Zdarsky's writing, and this was just another extension of that. I knew he was going to do great. I knew this was going to be like greatly written. And after I read it, I was blown away because there's so many good points to it. There's a few things I'm confused about, which makes me think maybe all of this is just in Franklin's head because of the old costumes. Like, I don't know why Kate is in her old costume or Magneto is, but some people aren't. Like Xavier's not and Storm's not. So it's weird throwbacks for this one issue, which is kind of making me question things. But I mean, really like the issue.
If you look at the timeline in the other books, it's mentioned that Krakoa has been only there for a month or maybe a month and a half. And in this book, it seems like Krakoa has been established for a while because they're like, we want to bring like Franklin home now. And it seems to be set further down the line, because I don't think like a month in, Xavier and Magneto are going to be like, we need him right now.
Yeah, probably not.
Because, it just doesn't... It seems like this is way further than any of the Doc's books or set in an alternate universe.
Yeah.
I don't think it's set in an alternate universe. The way someone made it seem was... I don't know. A bit early. Obviously, if it is in the timeline, it's obviously set a little bit earlier before Kitty was murdered. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, there are moments... Kitty outside of, well, like I remember in the first issue of Excalibur, she helped, I believe the first issue of Excalibur, she helped them sail to the lighthouse. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was the second issue.
Yeah, okay. So, and the one thing that Jordan White is that everybody's not going to be in the same costume all the time, because when I asked them about the Jean's costume in the giant sized, you know, Jean Grey and I'm from in that issue, she's in that weird, you know, she's in that yellow and green battle armor, and so he's like, they're not going to be wearing the same costumes, which I'm guessing maybe this issue was like following up on that statement.
But if that were true, Pyro doesn't even have his tattoo on his face and he's wearing his old face mask, so that's what that for me personally threw me off a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it threw me off too.
I didn't can't really get that. So it'd have to have been really early, like a little bit, and if I don't know when that would have happened between the, I mean, it was a pretty solid straight shot of when got his between, you know, when that started, when Pyro got his tattoo. Was like issue one or two, I think.
I feel like this is all this kid's scenario playing out in his head. Like, it doesn't feel like it's 100% real, just because of the costuming was one of the things, but also just I wouldn't put it past them to do something like that.
Yeah, and I feel like honestly the X-Men might, maybe not Magneto, but maybe the X-Men in general would have had more tact than just, like, storming in there and be like, hey, well, we want Franklin. He's a mutant. He should come with us. I just feel like they would have had more tact than that. But maybe they wouldn't have. But that's why I don't think it's
I have a theory. Maybe 100% real. I have a theory. One of two things. One, it's Franklin trying to figure things out. Or two, it might be Reed figuring things out. For the simple fact is, I don't know if you guys ever read Fantastic Four Dark Reign.
Yeah.
Where it dealt with, it was also written by Hickman, which is interesting. And Reed trying to follow the universe where the Illuminati was formed, but the Civil War didn't happen.
Yeah.
Or everything turned out okay. And so maybe this is him exploring different scenarios on what happens, exploring a different scenario on what happens if he doesn't let, or when he makes his decision,
right,
you know, what he does and what's the outcome of it. And that might be it. I just thought.
Because you do get two most focal perspectives are Franklin and Richards.
That's true.
So you get two perspectives of theirs mostly throughout the book. And you get the dad's perspective of, like, you know, he should be happy. He's human. That should be enough for him.
Yeah.
And then you get Franklin's perspective of, like, why is no one listening to me? Why am I being ignored? I'm old enough to make my own choices. So there's, like, the juxtaposition of both of their ideas of, you're still my kid and I'm old enough.
I mean, and also, quick point was just, like, Charles is an idiot and he's a dumbass, but, like, I don't think he would approach with that much force.
Yeah.
And if he really wanted Franklin, we've seen him, it's implied in, like, the early issues of Hawks and Pox, that, like, he's not above mind-controlling people now.
Right.
Like, just straight up. So if he really wanted Franklin that badly, he would have taken him, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, you definitely.
Would have just done it. So
especially when Sue, like force field Magneto, I'm like, he would have probably shut that whole thing down right then and there. Like, that, I was surprised that he didn't. So that's why another reason I'm just like, I don't think this is really them. One reason I hope it kind of is them, because in the beginning when Quentin is being played by the Cuckoos and they stop him from going through the gate psychically, that's the same way Kitty didn't go through the gate. Like, so maybe it kind of throws back to Marauders. Like, maybe someone is playing with Kitty and not our Kate and not making her go through the gate psychically, because we just saw that with Quentin. So if all this is real, that includes the realness as well. And I want to go before that and say, in the director's cut, Chip Zdarsky said that Deacon was there with Quentin right before the Marauders got there, and that he left right after. So I'm like, are they kind of hinting that they're going to become a thing later? Because that would be really interesting. I remember talking about you with that earlier, Fox, and I would actually kind of like that, because it would be really destructive.
And, yeah, that would show, like, a little bit of camaraderie between, because I like when teams interact with each other. That'd be cool, interactiveness between X-Force and X-Factor. Whenever that, but yeah, I think the moral of the entire story of Fantastic Four X-Men is that adults are stupid, except for Kitty.
Hey, Sue was also the voice of reason in there.
Yeah, I mean, Sue was a little bit voice of reason, but I didn't like, which I thought was kind of out of her character, which is, makes me think another reason why it's not real, that Sue at the end just forgave Reed. Like, she kind of called him out on his bullshit a little bit. Like, hey, you know, you should have done that. But then she, like, hugged him and was like, la-di-da with it. And I'm just like, I don't think that's what Sue would have done. Like, especially if Reed deliberately put something in her child that she was defending to mess with his body, I don't think she would have been that forgiving.
I think she would have. She's done dealt with worse with him.
I mean,
absolutely
yeah.
dealt with
worse. I mean, that's true. I mean, it's Reed Richards.
I think she's like, well, I guess you were looking out for her kid. Might as well chip the kid.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, she has dealt with worse. I mean, she did basically switch entire sides in Civil War.
Okay, so I just want to point something out that if Franklin does have something that prevents him from going through the gates because it's hiding his mutant identity, wouldn't Kitty have one too? Would it make sense for maybe Kitty to have one too, and maybe that's why she can't go through it, but she's not well aware? Because it's just a chip. She could have been chipped at any time because it's not implied that she's been revived.
That is interesting.
Could Sebastian have put something? Could Sebastian have, like, found out somehow? Maybe, here's a theory, maybe Emma had told Chris that she planned to have Kitty be her thing, be her Red Queen. Sorry. Remember, because that was on the leaked data page, that was, it said Red King for her, but Red Queen, that she, and that could have been their plan, that he leaked that information to Sebastian, and maybe Sebastian might have implanted her with something, somehow. I mean, we see how they implant Pyro with that yellow jacket submarine thing, which is very weird. Science, and I love it. Reminded me of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
Oh yeah, I love that movie as a kid.
Yeah, but that was, that's actually a good theory. I didn't even think about. Maybe she was implanted with some sort of that device. I mean, there's tons of science to build something like that.
I mean, it could be like an extension of like how power dampeners were made, because we haven't seen really anyone with power dampeners walk through the gates. So the technology might have been there already, and it just adjusted so that someone couldn't walk through the gates.
That's true.
I wouldn't put it past Shaw to do something like that.
Yeah.
I feel like we went off on a tangent with this, and we were all discussing Fantastic Four and X-Men.
I know. I just want to bring up, can we talk about how it's not shocking, but how bullshit Reed Richards is to do that to his own child if this is real? Like, that's, I mean, I was shocked by it, but I wasn't truly shocked. But I mean, he's just an asshole. And we knew this because the Council of Reed exists and all the other Reeds and all the other dimensions leave their families as well, except for this one. But I mean, if this is true, he might just be on that path. This might be a little window into Reed becoming, like, quote-unquote a dark Reed or something like that. Because that's really messed up to be trying to say you're fixing your child because he wants to be fixed, but really just messing him up even more in a way to make him more normal even though he doesn't want to be.
That is a good point, and something people have been asking, you know, like, oh, like, you know, Reed's kind of a shady individual. Of Reed Xavier interactions, there was I don't know if you guys ever read New Avengers, The Illuminati, that limited series.
Yeah.
There was that issue where they gathered the Infinity Gems, and at the end, Reed, like, takes off the gems and everything, and he's like, oh, I'm so glad you were, I'm just, he's like, I'm disappointed in you, Reed Richards, but I'm glad you had the humanity to be able to take the glove. And he says, you know, me too, but then it kind of zooms in on Xavier's face, like, being displeased, almost like Xavier had to be the one to go inside Reed's mind to take it off. Hmm. And so, like, Xavier should have brought Illuminati in this. He should have, like, they were on a dark secret organization where they made decisions for the rest of the world, unbeknownst to everybody else. And it's like, Xavier's like, you're coming at me for doing something like this? We used to do this stuff all the time. We helped worlds die.
That's why I feel like this isn't real. Because, like, there's such a deep relationship between the Fantastic Four and the X-Men. Like, I just finished reading a whole story from, like, 2012 or something like that, where the Fantastic Four showed up at the X-Men mansion to do the same thing because of astronauts in space. Like, I was like, okay, so they know each other, their family. Sue mentions at the end that they are their part of their family. Why wouldn't they just approach them as such? Why would they come like guns a-blazing, ready to come and take Franklin away? And like, they had a bit of a conversation, but even that conversation was not the most productive conversation, where Mag says, like, basically we're above you and he needs to be with his family, so give us your kid. Like, I feel like none of that was actually within character.
This kind of reminds me when House of X 1 came out and Scott said that weird line about Franklin. And everyone was like, this is really out of character for Scott. It seems like whenever they come into interactions with the Fantastic Four, the characters become out of character.
Yeah.
So maybe Franklin is involved in this somehow, that he's sort of bending reality very slightly to his own will.
That's why I found this the info page on this issue really interesting, with the God power, where it showed that they were trying to find the origin of their power, and they're saying that Franklin is getting cut off from the God power. That's why his powers are waning. And I'm like, what is this now? Like, I tried researching what the God power was, and I don't know if you guys have heard it before, but I haven't heard of this before.
I hadn't heard about it before, but all I know is that the scientist that was in the info page, that was a scientist that was on the that was with it was in Marvel 2-in-1.
The time travel with him.
Yeah.
Or the travel multiverse travel with him.
Uh-huh. So that was an interesting callback to one of, you know, Zdarsky's other works. I think this all pretty much proves that Zdarsky should have been writing Fantastic Four this entire time.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. He definitely should.
Like, he does such a good job with the one-on-one conversations, like the talk with Sue and Reed, where Sue's like, he's young, he's trying to find his place in the world, you know, after telling them this whole story about when she was a soccer star and she was had this bright future, and then she broke her leg and then she had to figure out where she was in life. Like, love that conversation. Then the one that Ben and Franklin had together in the diner, where he's like, I don't think he's trying to fix us. Like, think about it. Like, how long has he had? Do you really think he wants to fix us? Because what is he without us? Kind of mentality. Like, for the guy who wants to fix the world, what was he going to do without them? And then, you know, you have the moments with like Kitty and Franklin, and there's like that moment of both of them have been the young person in the team, so they have that connectivity. And then also, you know, the previous stories where they were together. So like, he does really good beats where he has moments between these characters where you're just like, oh my god, where have you been my whole life in Fantastic Four?
I think if this was if this was an actual thing, I don't think Xavier would have brought so many people, because like, the only two logical people for Xavier to bring with him would be Kitty, obviously with her connection to Franklin, and Storm, because Storm literally was a leader of the Fantastic Four for the short
run. Mm-hmm.
It was Reggie Hudlin's short run of Fantastic Four, where Black Panther and Storm led the team while Reed and Sue were on like a second honeymoon, and they did all kind of crazy adventures. They actually went to Marvel Zombies universe. It was wild. But yeah, like, Storm literally was leader of the X-Men for a short time, of the Fantastic Four for the short time.
Right.
Like, they could have talked, and it would have, and like, I don't see Xavier not at least not letting Reed come to Krakoa. I don't. I get a lot of people are. I don't. I think Reed's one of the few people that Xavier would trust.
Exactly.
I mean, Franklin has created universes, so, and he's had also, like, manifested his own dreams. So this could be just a dream that he's having that's real in depth from, and he's doing using talking points from what he's seen on TV, like, from Magneto and Xavier just broadcasting about Krakoa and being, you know, the new superpower. He's just taking from that and using it to express this whole manifest of a dream sequence. Because this whole issue is very, like, passive-aggressive a little bit. Like, each character is a little passive-aggressive. And Franklin Richards, as of recently, Dan Slott is writing Fantastic Four, right? In the new Dan Slott series, Franklin Richards is very passive-aggressive in that series. He's very angry, I mean, because his power is leaving him and no one's really using him anymore. But he's very angry and passive-aggressive. So this is really reflects him as a character if he's making all this up.
And that would also explain a lot why Kitty is the only person who listens to him and...
Right. He's got that connection.
Yeah, because of their friend, their friendship back dating all the way back to the original Fantastic Four X-Men series. But yeah, there's so much to talk about this issue and in just one issue too. Like it's so good. And this is why I hope there's that rumor that Zdarsky was writing a Namor series for Dawn of X.
Yeah.
And that's why I so hope it's true, because he's so good at writing Namor.
Oh, he does such a good Namor. Like I feel like it's just him. He's writing himself.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because like the things that he decided to put on there, like callbacks, like Ben Grimm talking to Storm and saying like, oh, you guys are building a new Genosha. Like, dude, that's a low blow.
That was a low
to them. Like, man, come on. That's like one of those things where you're like, we don't talk about that.
See, that's another reason why I think it's Franklin, because Franklin would be blunt like that. I don't think Ben Grimm is blunt, but I don't think he would be like, hey, so there's a new Genosha. Like, remember when that got blown up? Like, I don't think he, especially the Storm, he respects Storm, so I don't think he would be that blunt or that insensitive to her, but Franklin sure would, because he doesn't really care. I mean, he cares, but he's also a teenager, so he doesn't care.
Almost?
Yes.
Did you have anything to add on? You've just been very quiet.
This isn't, like, me. I didn't really, like, connect with the story. I was very disconnected from it. I don't have very strong opinions on it. I think it was a weird story, and I'm still like holding on to the theory that this might not be real, because everyone was way too aggressive about the situation. And I don't know, like I personally like the release, the interaction between Sophie and Quentin for the first time in 10 years. Very glad we've had like, because I'm just only hoping to see some of the stuff from Morrison's run get acknowledged again, because there's a lot of bullshit that happened that was just, like, brushed over the past 10 years. Because, especially with Krakoa, like, with it taking so much out of Morrison's run, I kind of want to see, like, how much that impacted the characters who were at the Xavier School at the time, and now they're just alive again. You know?
That makes a lot of sense.
That was really off-tangent. Sorry.
No, I get that, but does anybody have any more thoughts on Fantastic Four X-Men, or do we pretty much all just like
I think we definitely talk about it a lot. We need to. Yeah. We'll save more for the next issue. We'll move on.
Hold on, real fast though. Come on, Doom at the end. Like I'm like, come on. I was like, who has more connection with Doom than anybody else? It's those two kids, of course. At the end, it's going to show up as Doom. That's all I wanted to end it on. I was like, of course, here we go.
Yeah, I'm just interested to find out what Doom's perspective on Krakoa is, because I remember back in the Hoxbox when we saw a list of, you know, countries that weren't aligned with Krakoa. Yep. Latveria. I don't know why I always call it Latveria, but that doesn't even sound cool. Latveria was not one of the ones aligned, and it would be
interesting to come see. On. Doom is above all that. He doesn't need handouts.
Yeah, true.
Even though we all know he could, but
that's neither
here nor there.
Oh, this country could definitely use
He's too prideful. He's not going to use it. Yes.
Okay, so speaking of like other countries that aren't real, what happened in Black Cat this issue?
Have any of y'all been reading Black Cat?
I have not been. I only pretty much read it because I heard. I mean, I read it partly because I heard it was going to be a pseudo Dawn of X tie-in, and partly because it's Chris Anka drawing it, and I love that man to death because every character he draws is very pretty.
Yeah. I've been following this issue since issue one because I love Black Cat, and I love Jed McKay because I read his Daughters of the Dragon book, and I read something else of his. I can't remember what it is, and I'm also excited for his... Oh, now I'm going blank. He's writing another solo character coming soon. It's a villain. It's in a new Black Widow movie. What's his name?
Is he writing that... he's writing Taskmaster.
Taskmaster, that's what he... I can't believe I just blanked on that. Yeah, he's writing Taskmaster. But that's one of the reasons why I just magnetized towards Black Cat. And it's been... If you haven't read it, you should. It's been fantastic. And this issue with Wolverine, or should I say Mr. Patch, has been great. Because, just to give you a little backstory, I mean, Black Cat's basically going to Mandapore because she's trying to find something else that she's trying to steal for this big plot that she's having to try to steal against the Thieves Guild. So it's this whole big plot that you need to read. I don't want to spoil too much of it. But basically, she finds out that Mr. Patch, or Wolverine, or Logan, has the painting that has the information that she's looking for. So she goes to his hideout after talking to so many different people. And she goes there, and it's all stolen. And then he's there, and she's like, oh, of course you're Mr. Patch. I mean, Wolverine, of course that's you. Because she didn't know it was him at first. And I love it because they make him... Like, Chris Anka makes him look so dashing and actually gets his height right. Because he's short, and some of the artists don't make him short. I think they're kind of catching on to that now because people have complained. But he's definitely significantly shorter than Felicia Hardy. But their interactions, like, I tweeted this to Jed, and I just love their interactions so much. I know they had a book in the past, and I need to read it because I haven't. But at a point, they find out that the connection to all this that is with Krakoa is the little kid, Cade, is the one that's one of the ones that's over the new Hellfire Club. He actually has a vendetta against Wolverine, and he's the one that stole all the things in his little basement. So he also, the Cade, owns a casino. So they go to the casino, and you know Black Cat has bad luck powers, so she just ups everything. Like, people that win big, people that lose big. So they're just like, you need to get out. And it's like, well, I need to see your boss. I'm gonna make everything go ape shit even more. So they go see the boss, and I mean, Wolverine just loses it off the bat because this little smug kid, I mean, he comes in and he's like, well, what do you want? He's like, I basically can do whatever I want. I can own you if I want to. And it's just so funny because Wolverine, you know, he never really keeps his cool for anything. And Felicia Hardy is just so badass. She notices that, I mean, they're not going to be able to take the painting right now because it's goons and everything. It's only two of them. They could do an all-out fight, but it's smarter to do the other thing. So she takes his little technological glasses, and like, they jump out the window. And he's like, I hate your plan, Black Cat, because, I mean, who wants to jump out the window? But she does because she's a fucking badass. But then he loses his shit that they take the glasses, and he says the glasses are the bleeding edge technology, and it's an interface to all his corporate accounts. So with that, she can do whatever she wants, basically. She can hack into it and get all his money or other things. That's why he's like, I send everybody to kill her kill Wolverine as much as you can, and then get those glasses back. But I can't wait for next issue, because I'm sure we're going to get even more interactions with Wolverine and Felicia Hardy, and see how they can take over this kid. And maybe they'll even bring him down, and maybe they'll make, you know, the mutants not as in danger if one of the little Hellfire Club people are taken away.
I was just so surprised how heavily this tied into Dawn of X. Like, I was not expecting that. I would, if you asked me, say, hey, which non-X book do you think will tie in the most heavily to Dawn of X? If you had said Black Cat, I would have been like, okay, why are you lying to me right now? It's like, because it's Black Cat. Like, I knew, of course, Wolverine's going to show up in other books because he's Wolverine and he's super popular and he helps sell things. But Black Cat, like, I did not expect Black Cat to be that heavily tied into Dawn of X. And it's like, it's really interesting because at first when I was reading it, I'm like, when Cade says, he's like, this isn't going to start. He's like, I don't care about Krakoa. He's like, I'm not going to start a war with them. And then that made me think, like, wait, what he's doing in Marauders is basically that. But, like, even in Marauders, he really doesn't even care about Krakoa. He just cares about making money.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't care. Like, he just wants money. And that's who he is. And, like, that's almost just as bad as being a racist jerk. But he just wants money. He's going to do about it. He's going to go about it any way he wants. But yeah, that is, I think my favorite part of the issue was in when she's going around asking Rudy questions and she goes to Deadpool and Deadpool's like, oh my god, you don't know, and he just laughs. She's like, no spoilers.
I know, I loved that.
He's like, oh, I'm in a comic book, and that was one of those good, and like Howard the Duck's on vacation inside Madripoor.
And I know, I love all the little talking heads that they had with so many of the people. Like,
Taskmaster was in there, so, which is an interesting kind of, like, he's like, oh, I'm writing Taskmaster, I'm going to put Taskmaster right here in this panel.
I know, I love when writers do that. They, like, kind of connect, or even a little bit, try to connect all their books together. I love that.
Yeah. Okay, so, the next book that we're going to be discussing, Almas, do you want to...
The next book, I think we're all not surprised, ties into Dawn of X because it's written by Duggan, Savage Avengers. And I think this issue was the one where Steven comes in and is floating over Krakoa so he could be like, no, I'm not actually on Krakoa. I read it and I don't really have I don't really have an opinion on it. It seems very much so that everyone wants to just annoy mutants, like, because now mutants have, like, done their own thing. They're not even, like, that dominant in the economy, but, like, everyone still wants to bother them. It's like they can't catch a break no matter how much they try, you know? That's what this issue felt like for me. It felt like, yeah, this is gonna stir up some bullshit.
This book was mostly reprint from, like, a really old story.
Yeah.
And I think it really didn't tell us anything new other than, like, Doctor Strange knows that there's something going on in Krakoa involving magic, like, which is interesting because I'm very interested to see when we eventually see Doctor Strange in Excalibur, because that is the most reasonable place for him to show up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what are we going to see? Like, I mean, actually, now thinking about it, I think Apocalypse versus Doctor Strange would be interesting. Because I feel like all the people wouldn't know whose side to take. Like, if you had Apocalypse and you had Doctor Strange, realistically, you'd want to side with Doctor Strange. Because Apocalypse is, like, Apocalypse, you know?
He's not a good guy. I like Apocalypse. I think he's a great character, but he's not the best person.
No, yes. Definitely not.
But yeah, so, this issue didn't really tell us anything that we didn't already know. Mm-hmm. But
I think it was just a setup for letting you know what they're about to tackle. But I do love the fact that they're like, oh, by the way, let's not forget that Ileana has ties to magic, too. She is part of this whole story as well and has interacted with, I don't even remember the name of the dude.
Something with a V.
Yeah. So I thought that was really cool how they did a callback to it. And he's like, just be warned, he's coming back and he's stronger than ever. And she's like, well, I'm not a little girl anymore. Bring it.
Yeah, which also, because that also makes me want, when are we going to see Magic and, by extension, Pixie, like, you know, the other mutants who already know Magic, show up in Excalibur? Because, like,
right.
I would think they would want to learn mutant magic.
Well, I mean, this episode, like, not this episode, I'm sorry I keep calling them episodes.
Yeah, I can call it episodes.
It's an episodic story, okay? I'm sorry. So, I mean, in the last issue of Excalibur, Apocalypse was all up in LaFey's guts. So, I think he's still figuring out mutant magic. He's not 100% sure how to pull that off. So I think once he learns, he'll invite everyone in. And from the previews of this week's Excalibur, I think Betsy might have a word with him over mutant magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good segue. Good segue. Okay.
I'm really excited to see more of Jamie.
Yeah.
That guy is crazy. He's the worst person to put on a throne.
But it's always fun to whenever an Omega level mutants are out, because that's when, you know, that's when things are gonna go wild.
Well, because here's the interesting thing. You have the two people in charge of Otherworld right now are technically Jamie and Apocalypse. Because, like, here's the thing, Jamie is working with Apocalypse, and, like, he has no qualms working with Apocalypse. He's like, yeah, this man trusts me, this man gave me the throne, so yeah, I'm gonna trust Apocalypse and let him do whatever he wants. You know, that's, like, a interesting power dynamic to have, because Apocalypse is unhinged. Like, he'll do whatever he wants, and Jamie doesn't really listen to anyone unless he's having fun. So the next issue is probably going to be wild.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, yeah, that's, yeah, Excalibur didn't really show us anything different or new. Yeah. Not saying it's not interesting. It didn't show, like, it was a natural progression of the story of where it's going next. And that's something. The other two books, however, had very interesting previews. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, X-Force.
And, I can't wait for that one.
Yeah. One thing I think is the most, X-Force is just generally interesting as its own because of all, like, you know, the espionage and political intrigue. Mm-hmm. One thing I do want to bring up is that in the X-Force preview, they mention X-Corp. This is
isn't like the second time?
Yep. Yeah, I think New Mutants. So. New Mutants mentioned it first.
Yeah.
And Ooh. Now X-Force.
Hey, I mean, there is that very highly rumored X-Corp's book. Maybe this is this issue has to come out before they can announce X-Corps.
Well, it's funny because X-Corp is not even technically rumored. It was basically announced.
Yeah, they just never said the creative team for it.
Yeah, the only part of the creative team we know is Carmen Canero, and we don't even know if that's a thing anymore because, like, Carmen Canero is joining Miles Morales Spider-Man for the Outlaw fans. So
It's kind of been mum with her about anything else. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know anything about X-Corp, which is, we don't know if that, could that book have fallen through? Because we know that Dawn of X has made decisions on the fly about books, because we saw how Form Angels ended.
That is true.
So we know they're not, like, above, like, changing things up on the fly, but, and I just think that's cool. I mean, if X-Corp is still a book, awesome. That's another thing I'm gonna have to dole out money for.
Right.
But yeah, X-Corp is. I hope it's real, because I'm gonna be interested, because what's a corporate book gonna be like in Dawn of X?
Right. And if you think about it, there's more than enough mutants that are just sitting around doing nothing without being in a book that could be involved.
That's very true.
Angel should be, like, the
head Angel of Angel knows business.
Angel does Angel know. Knows That's business. Right. That's, he could be X-Corp.
Worthington, come on.
There you go. He could be the leader.
Money boy.
He's never really been a leader, right? I mean, he could be the leader of that.
Almost. I know you're.
Okay, so X-Corps is a lot, and I don't think Warren should run it, because Warren has never worked a day in his life, and this is canon, because Hodge has run X-Corps, and Candy Southern ran X-Corps. It was never Warren. It was always his friends. So, unless X-Corps is also setting back my most anticipated plot of 2020, which is, I'm honestly guessing that Cameron Hodge is going to be back in the next couple of months, because it seems like the fan lax was a huge thing in Hawksbox, you know? Makes sense for him to, like, track back to that. I know this is, like, tangential, but, like, I'm anticipating, like, if we're going to have an X-Corps book, because a lot of the... Like, if it's going to be, like, an international business thing, I feel we're going to have, like, more of the weirder villains on that one. I'm sorry, that was, like, really tangential.
We know you love Cameron Hodge, Hollis. We know it.
Okay. And now for, like, another, everyone else's favorite villain. Mystique is in the new X-Force. X-Men.
Yes.
That was interesting because that was an interesting point because, like, apparently she was added to this group for purpose, because it's funny, that group that led the, you know, put the assault on the mother mold, Mystique really didn't fit into that.
I knew, dude. She's the espionage queen.
Oh, yeah.
And she didn't fit in, and so that's interesting to find out that Xavier sent her for other purposes.
And come on. She got turned around. Girl, please. Like, you don't know your way around places.
Yeah.
That was all. I knew from the get-go. I was like, this is not her. And when that happened, when she was in Orcus, I was like, no, there's something to it. And I'm so happy they came back to that.
Yeah, she planted planted something for the winter harvest.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it's interesting. They didn't destroy they didn't destroy the
mother mold
thing. They just destroyed the head in the center. So what she planted be something watching, like maybe a no place with inside there where they can go if need be.
Right. Hey, use their own power against them.
Yeah. Or something that could watch them and find out what they're doing ahead of time.
Right. Because you think about it, like, everything that the villains are doing to the mutants, mm-hmm. they in turn can do to them as well. Like, they have all the, you know, potential to do it. And I feel like this is leading into that, where they're like, oh, well, let's start our espionage.
Yeah.
So, and we had, like, a couple of X-Books announced this week. Well, not, I guess you'd call Giant Size an X-Book. But we got Phantom X announced. How are we feeling about that one?
I don't know much. I know a little bit about Phantom X, but I haven't read that much about him. But I'm interested to find out how Phantom X feels after Xavier, like, taking his body. I mean, well, he volunteered his body to Xavier in Uncanny X-Men last year. But I'm interested to see how he feels about that. Like, how is he psychically okay? You know, because I'm sure they had to bring him back to life and all that. But what's the outcome of that? Is he just okay back to normal? Or does he have a trauma like the other guy did in the new X-Men book that went into the tunnel? What was his name? Sink?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had trauma too. Cinch. He had trauma too. So I'm thinking maybe Phantom X has trauma too, because you had your whole body taken over by Xavier.
Well, the thing is with Phantom X, Homeboy was part of Weapon X. He's used to being messed with.
Yeah, that is true.
Speaking of Weapon X, Phantom X is I remember our good friend, we all know Jared, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, who runs Vox Krakoa, another podcast, which is also fantastic. We're not above plugging other people's stuff,
right? Absolutely.
It's a very good podcast. Y'all should listen to it.
Oh, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, but he brought up the fact that Phantom X is actually part Sentinel.
Yeah, because he was made to destroy the mutants.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
So he is part mutant, part Sentinel. I don't see the X-Men exactly feeling okay with him being on Krakoa right now.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, there's tension possibly between the mutants and Phantom X.
And the thing is, Phantom X has no alignment.
Yeah. He's very much chaotic neutral.
Yeah, and he's a thief. I'm like, and he has a price. So it's all about his self-interest. So do you trust a guy like that in your new world?
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't know how much I would trust that either. But yeah, that's certainly, as much as I wish there were like more women characters focused on in Giant Size, because I feel like they shoved like their biggest three, Emma, Storm, and Jean, into one book and just said, hey.
Oh my god. Day. No kidding.
Right.
But
I mean, like, even with the announcement of Juggernaut, which is a mini, I think, it really does feel like it feels very white and it feels very male. And I'm just sitting here like, you, Marvel is like really overestimating how invested I can get in a white man. Like, I know I defend Warren and Christian all the time, but like.
Well, the thing is, if it didn't have a place within the narrative, I would be upset about it. But Juggernaut did turn a new leaf. He was going more towards, you know, being a hero, and he was part of the X-Men. He's always going to be tied to the X-Men, but he doesn't fit into Krakoa. He's not going to be part of Krakoa, so where does that leave him? Right. And the fact that they're introducing this new little sidekick mutant that doesn't want to be part of Krakoa, I think it's going to be an interesting, you know, journey for him.
Yeah.
And it's like rebuilding this character.
Well, if you think about it, the last time we saw Juggernaut, though, was in the newest Uncanny X-Men. And then when Magic lost her shit, and she took his gem, and I believe she destroyed it, and then sent him away somewhere. And I think in Limbo, or maybe just somewhere else. That's the last time we saw Juggernaut. Now, I don't know how truly canon that run is. I'm assuming it's canon.
It's all canon now because of Moira.
Yeah, it's all canon, so that's canon. So I don't know if they're going to touch base on that and explain how he became Juggernaut again, because he lost the gem. Like, Magic took it away and sent him away. So I hope they actually acknowledge that and say, hey, I got it back this way or something like that. Because he always gets the gem back. It always calls back to him. Someone always gives it back to him. He always becomes Juggernaut again. That's just his destiny. But I just hope they explain it.
Yeah, Juggernaut was a very left field announcement. I was really not expecting. They got back a very popular X-writer, Fabian Nicieza, to write it, which is very cool, because, you know, Fabian's a really cool guy. He writes so many good books, and he's written so many good X books. But yeah, it was very, very left field. And speaking of left field, Free Comic Book Day! Yay!
Oh man, that's an interesting.
I'm super excited for that.
There was that cover was really gorgeous. I'm actually looking at it right now with the drawn by Pepe Larraz. Mm-hmm. It has Magic, Storm, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, and Rogue, which is interesting to have Rogue here because Rogue's so tied up in Excalibur. But it almost has representation from almost every team on here. Right. You have Wolverine from X-Men and X-Force, Storm from Marauders, Magic from New Mutants, and Rogue from Excalibur.
And Kurt is from Children of the Atom for now.
Well, we don't know how involved he's going to be in that, though.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, too, if you look at it, it's also those characters have been involved in all these stories that are currently in. Like, you have your New Mutant, you have your Excalibur, which is Kurt, and you have your X-Men, which is Storm, and then you have your X-Force character, which was Wolverine. Like, they've all been into those stories. So I was like, oh, okay, I see what you're doing.
Yeah, they're really setting up a crossover.
And it's supposed to be the setup to the big major event that's supposed to happen in December, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm. The summer.
I think, right? I don't know why I thought I read in the in the solicit for it, I thought it said a summer event. Let me look.
Yeah, I think it's summer.
Yeah.
Because I think it's Empire, and then we're having something different set up in December.
Let me look.
You see, I remember December being something, but I don't know if it was. I thought it was supposed to be the mutants coming back to, you know, the world at large.
Hold on. No, it says Free Comic Book Day 2020 X-Men will feature a brand new X-Men story by Jonathan Hickman and Pepe Larraz that will lead into the game-changing summer for all of X.
Okay.
I thought so.
Yeah, so it's definitely setting up something for the summer, but the next part of the solicit for it really makes me, I think a little even more makes me interested. The second story will foreshadow an upcoming epic tale by Tom Taylor and Ivan Coelho. And y'all know me, I am a giant Tom Taylor stan. I love him. And one of my followers who came up with something out of the blue that I didn't even really think of. Because we know when asked, everybody's assuming Tom Taylor is writing an X-Men story. He said it's not just X-Men. And then he quote tweeted a picture that the artist for the book was writing and had Iron Man in it. Well, I don't know if anybody's read Secret History of the Marvel Universe that just happened.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the book, there is a teaser for, like, there is a foreshadowing a bunch of events that are going to be happening soon in the Marvel Universe. One of them was the wedding of Emma Frost and Tony Stark.
Which, girl, that's the guy you marry.
You need better to Emma. Don't marry Tony Stark. That is bad taste.
Bad taste. She was with Scott for a long time. So let's.
She was also with Shaw for a while.
She doesn't have the best track record.
I know. She doesn't have the best track record. Tony would be on the ballpark of the men that she likes. So it wouldn't be that much different.
It could be more of like a strategic wedding. Like, if you're in Krakoa and, like, you marry one of the most well-known rich men in America, and he's, like, essentially American royalty, like, if they get married, that's, like, a protection. Right. Like, you're not going to hurt the wife of Tony Stark.
Yeah.
No.
It's like what they do in, like the olden days where they would marry together to unite the kingdoms kind of thing.
I was joking about the royal wedding, but I didn't think it would actually happen in Dawn of X. I hope it does.
I don't know.
I'm excited for the royal wedding of Tony Stark and Emma Frost.
Right.
I mean, Emma Frost is all about strategy. And, I'm sure Tony Stark wouldn't be opposed to marrying Emma Frost.
Oh, come on.
Because she's powerful, she's sexy, she's very intelligent. And as he's shown, he's kind of off the board right now in his own little thing. But as he's shown, Tony Stark is a character, from what I've kind of read, has grown. And he's been dating or been with a lot of strong women lately. I know he was dating the Wasp for a little bit. She's one of the strongest women.
That was a couple to me.
So he's always been into strong women like that. So him being with Emma doesn't surprise me.
I mean, like, I don't know. It's I don't know how that would play in the next few X books, because I feel like we might get, like, I don't know, like, Emma would have to choose to be in the same room with Tony Stark after I think she has a restraining order filed against him. I think it was something like that, because I know that the last time they interacted was during it was after Civil War 2. It was Avengers versus X-Men?
Yeah. No, it would be, I think it would be Avengers versus X-Men. I think this book will be a lot like what Fantastic Four X-Men was. I think it'll be a limited series, and it will be written by Tom Taylor, and it'll just be called, X or, AX or something. Yeah. And so I don't think it's going to be a full-blown event. I think it will be just a small, four-issue, five-issue series.
A prelude.
I don't think prelude. I think it will be a self-contained story within the five issues that's going to happen. And it's just going to set up things for future. I don't think it's an event. I do think it's a limited series, though.
I think it's
I don't think it'll be an event.
Like a little bit like a cleaning of the universe at the moment.
Yeah.
You know how Extermination just cleaned up everything? So it could set up Uncanny and Age of X-Men last year. Yeah. I think this would be the event to just like clean up Dawn of X, pull it together a little bit more, like tighten the reins, and then push it into the newer phase.
I'm hoping that they continue, if this is just like a limited series of Avengers X-Men, we do get to see like limited series of X-Men being paired against other big Marvel characters within, you know, the Dawn of X paradigm. Like, I want to see a Black Panther X-Men event, like a Black Panther X-Men series, or Champions X-Men, because the Champions have big tie to X-Men, because like Cyclops was one of their founding members.
And Dust is still part of the Champions.
Yeah, Dust. You see Dust on one of the variant covers for Outlawed coming soon. Champions number one. So Dust is still a team member. And my theory is that, like, I could see Cyclops or, like, Xavier wanting to forge bonds with the future of the, you know, Marvel Universe. Like, try to create, like, alliances.
Here's the interesting thing. Like, Champions has always been like a mutant related team. Like, from its inception, it's about mutants getting together with other people. So it wouldn't make sense for like a Champions and X-Men series, but with the X-Kids probably.
Yeah.
Especially with the newer X-Kids.
Yeah.
Who we're expecting soon.
I love the Champions. You know, outside of X, like, I'm big on X-Men right now, but like, Champions is, you know, has Ms. Marvel, has Spider-Man, has Nova.
Oh, the best heroes.
The best heroes. And I would love to see, because like, if we remember one of the Champions tie-ins to War of the Realms,
which is one
of my favorite issues of the entire series, where one of the Champions teleports into where the X-Men are, like, holed up during the War of the Realms, and they're like, hey, the Champions aren't, you know, like, they kind of show up on accident, the X-Men almost fight them, but, like, Cyclops calls them down, and when their teleporter, his name's, like, Pinpoint or something, he's like, hey, Champions are in trouble, we're having issues, and Cyclops will be like, wait, what, the Champions? And so, like, next thing you see is, like, Cyclops burst in and like helps them defeat the, you know, the monsters that they're battling, and it's great, and it's one of the most beautiful moments. And
mm-hmm. and the moment, like, he has with Kamala,
and she just cries and just hugs him. I'm like, oh, he's like, how could I ever, you know, like, you guys are everyone else was.
That was a really tender moment.
That was beautiful, and I could just see, like, you know, Xavier going to, like, Xavier talking at, like, a secret council at, like, you know, a council meeting or whatever. He's like, yeah, we need to form bonds with, you know, possibly form bonds with, you know, superheroes and everything. We have to be pragmatic. And he's like, who better to forge bonds with than the future of the Marvel Universe?
Right.
And you already have that. Cyclops is already, you already have someone who used to be a member, and then you have someone who is a mutant, who is on the team. And that would be really good, and because we could see everybody's reaction, because I think they would all have very varied reaction, like, you know.
Oh yeah.
Amadeus Cho Hulk, I could see him being very suspicious of Krakoa.
Right.
And like, I could see Kamala having a hard time with it, you know, but like, understanding, like, she's from Pakistan, like, that was a nation created
from
people trying to get away from religious persecution within India.
Right.
And so I could see her, you know, being torn about it. And I want that series, partly because I'm just like, I love Champion so much. And
you're,
I want
just trying to talk it into existence.
I want my favorite characters to interact.
You see, I really want to see, where are the Inhumans at, by the way? And I want to see the Inhumans interact with this, because they didn't end in the best of terms.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, the Royal Inhumans are hiding. I think all the Inhumans are hiding off planet.
Yeah, so that's why I'm like, I want to see that interaction.
Imagine coming back to Earth as the Inhumans, and you're just like, this is they're doing what the Inhumans had then.
Yeah.
The Inhumans had the blue area of the moon.
Yep.
And they go back to the Blue Area of the Moon going, hey, like, let's, you know, let's come back to where we were. This might be, things are better now. And then you just got the Cyclops living there with his family.
Right.
He's like, yeah, guys, you left. This is my place now.
And you're like, oh, sorry, your lease is up.
Yeah, this would be a really, that would be a really interesting dichotomy. But, yeah, I think we kind of went off really topic from pre-comic book.
Yeah.
But, is there anything else anybody wanted to discuss?
Oh. Go ahead, Emma.
Oh, not necessarily. I'm just thinking, next week is going to be a lot. Yeah. There's so much to discuss between X-Force, which seems going to be like the domino story of the week, and whatever's going on in Excalibur, and X-Men, which is probably going to be our huge talking point next week. Don't you guys think?
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
If it's written by Hickman, it's going to be the big talking point.
I mean, we're all excited to see what Mystique does.
Yeah.
So, I think we should sign off.
Yeah.
I'm El Mas, on Worthington's on Twitter, and MN Worthington on Tumblr.
I'm Fox, I'm AgentFitz777 on Twitter, and yeah, that's about all I'm on.
And I'm Rodders on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at RideBunnySlay.
And Juan at ChangoATX on all the socials.
Thank you so much for visiting our habitat, and hopefully we'll see you again next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.